It's time to talk Mariners baseball.
Holy smokes!
With spring training just around the corner, we're geared up for baseball.
This is at the wall, and it is gone into the bullpen for a two-run homer. Some serious hang time from Nelson Cruz.
It's the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Sports app.
Well, welcome inside a very special edition of the Hot Stove Show. We are here from Safeco Field, right outside the beautiful KeyBank Diamond Club at the Premium Partners event here at Safeco Field. Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher, Bill Krueger, everyone, good to see you. This is a little bit of a different setup for us, isn't it?
It is. It's an impressive setup and, you know, beautiful set here. There are little quiches going by, which I don't know how safe they are, but, you know, great to be back at the ballpark.
Absolutely.
Saw a number of ballplayers today. Guys are getting ready to go. So, yeah, this is fun.
Well, Bill, I haven't seen you at all this offseason. How are things?
I'm just hiding out in Fall City on my farm. That's being generous. But, no, it's great to be here, great to feel baseball coming back and starting earlier this year. So
sure.
That's exciting. And I didn't know that we had TV lights. I didn't know we were getting HD makeup up. I guess I'm the only one that didn't get that memo. So.
Aaron has some for you.
Yeah, I always have some on my back. Don't worry about it. Well, the news of the day, obviously, is disappointing news. Edgar finishing 20 votes shy of Cooperstown this year, officially 70.4% of the vote, of course, needing 75. This was something that, as Shannon, I know, as you were tracking it as close as anyone, as these last couple of days unfolded, it became a little more evident that this would become a little closer than maybe it looked, let's say, a month ago or so.
Yes, and I think it was something we were anticipating because we've seen it every year where he's had the significant gains. It's kind of two different groups of voters you have, the ones who turn in their ballots early and they make them public and those that don't. And it's that latter group that has hurt him a little bit, but I think overall this is incredibly encouraging, finishing with 70.4% of the vote when he was just over 58 last year. And he himself, we had an opportunity to talk to him on a conference call not too long ago. He said, you know, I knew there was a chance this year, but I really didn't have the feeling. I think he was surprised that he made such strides this winter, but he said next year the trends are looking very good. And I think the most important thing is we saw that jump, and a lot of that is because of the discussion that has been had.
Sure.
And it's, you know, you see it on the MLB network, you see it on Twitter, you hear it on the radio. A lot more people are aware of what he did, and I think that's good for baseball.
I mean, you bring up for recent history, 2014 he was at 25%.
Yeah.
Last year he was at 54, 58. So we're talking some serious climbs. This is bringing up, of course, memories of Tim Raines from last season.
Right.
Raines in his 10th and final season gets in with an incredible push, just like what we're seeing from Edgar Wright.
And I think we'll see that push. And then also he finished with 70.4% of the vote. Over the last 10 years, there have been 10 players who hit that 70% mark. They all got in the Hall of Fame the next year.
Well, I was thinking about this from Edgar's point of view. Earlier today, once the news was announced, Bill, and I can't imagine what it must feel like for Edgar to have so many people rooting for him. Many of the people that he knows, right? The higher-ups of the Mariners, all the way down to the guys in the clubhouse, and then, of course, an entire city and an entire region. The amount of support that is being given to Edgar Martinez and his push now going into his 10th year next season, it's pretty remarkable, and it kind of feels like everyone is in this same camp together for Edgar. Obviously, we all are.
And I think for a guy that's extremely humble and appreciative, a guy that had to wait a long time to get his chance in the big leagues, a guy that played in the shadows of some pretty unbelievable players, but I think his just due is coming.
Sure.
You know, staying in a market his whole career, when quite honestly, if he'd have showed up in New York and did what he did in the strength of his career, people would have already like anointed him as maybe the greatest right-hand hitter of our generation, which we all kind of know he is anyway. So I think just due, great person, unbelievable work ethic, incredible focus, and left nothing to chance and put together an incredible career. And we're going to hear a lot more about his career as we get closer to next year's vote.
And next year will be special for a number of reasons, but you look at the potential class for next year with Edgar and a certain closer who he happened to feast on.
I think that would be so exciting. Mariano Rivera will be eligible. I'm sure he will go in on the first ballot. And you think about the battles that those two have. Mariano said he had, my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He absolutely owned me, is what Mariano said. But I think, you know, what a great era of Mariners baseball and the back and forth and the rivalry that they had with New York back then. To see those two go in together, I think that would be a lot of fun.
It'd be pretty spectacular. So it looks like we will have to wait one more year for Edgar, but I think it's probably safe for Mariners fans to start booking their travel to Cooperstown and their hotel arrangements for a year from now.
I canceled my hotel arrangements today.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I wonder, you can't be the only person from various fan bases who does that on a yearly basis, right? I mean, when you book, you just make sure that there's a full refund policy?
Absolutely. I booked back in November, and it was already pretty booked when Trammell and Morris went
oh,
in.
Sure.
Uh-oh, better get on this, and I was almost too late.
You know, just while we're talking about Edgar and Mariano, for his career, 11 for 19, he was nearly a .580 hitter with two home runs against Mariano Rivera. Now, keep this in mind, too. You look at some of the great all-time hitters. Now, some of these guys are already in the Hall. Another one is certainly on his way. Pudge, Frank Thomas, okay, a couple of Hall of Famers right there. Adrian Beltre, who I think we all agree is going to be in Cooperstown. Those three have combined for as many hits and as many home runs against Mariano Rivera as Edgar Martinez. I mean, it's spectacular.
And I think when that sort of brings the conversation to a certain context.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, with Edgar, I think when you get inside the game, you talk to the best pitchers, they will tell you that he's on a very short list of the best hitters they ever saw. And I think there's a lot of admiration across the field with position players as well, and how his tutelage has probably helped them along the way and the way he went about his work, right? But I think, for me, there are players that make a lot of numbers against the softer part of rotations that at times in the game that aren't as significant. And clearly, that's a representation of the kind of hitter he was, where he delivered against the best pitchers and the most important times.
Absolutely. So. Shannon, some news of the day from Safeco Field. I know this has been a long day for you here at the ballpark.
Yes.
A little bit of a rainy day as well, but you were here for the Hutch Luncheon.
Yeah, the annual Hutch Award Luncheon was today, and it's just such a wonderful event. If you have the opportunity to go, if you're looking for somewhere to make your donations, mm-hmm. what a wonderful place to do it. I say it all the time, but they are creating miracles. You drive by it on I-5 every day, and just to think of the things that are going on over there, and the funding is so important. But there is also a beautiful baseball tie with Fred Hutch, and his brother was the good doctor. There, and they always pick a player, and sometimes it is a player who has done things for a long time, and other times it is a player, and it's, of course, doing things in the community and whatnot. Other times it's a younger player, and it's really neat to see what that does for a younger player when it is. And they take the tour of the Hutch, and they meet the scientists, and they see what's happening there, and they go to the Hutch School, and they see the kids who have family members who are going under treatment. And so it's just really an incredible day, a couple of days when they're in town. Jake Diekman won the award this year and just gave a wonderful speech, and then the keynote speaker was Randy Johnson. And Rick Riz did just a really great sit-down with him for about 20 minutes. Luckily, it was sit-down. He didn't have to stand on that one. But
they don't make phone books anymore, at least not enough.
You know, you'd have to stack those little ones that they now drop off at the door every 3 months. But just a great, great day. Good to see RJ here at the park. And, of course, he has just really gotten on with his retirement. He's into the photography, traveling the world. Just it's an interesting fella. And it was a lot of fun to see him. He always kind of takes in the scene here. You can see it in his eye a little bit. I was on that mound, of course, not as a Mariner, but he pitched here, and you know, the baseball is still in him.
Yeah. Well, we've got a jam-packed Hot Stove Show tonight, and a little different in a very good way. We'll actually have our guests live in person here at the ballpark, and we will be hearing from a lot of notables, including Mariners manager Scott Servais coming up an hour from now. Mitch Haniger, Mariners right fielder, will be joining us as well in the second hour. Mike Zunino will be here as well. I'll be excited to talk to Mike about what his offseason has looked like, and a new Mariner, a couple of new Mariners, in fact. New first baseman Ryan Healy, fresh over from the Oakland A's, will be with us not long from now. And when we come back in just a few moments, we will be hearing from the new center fielder for the Mariners, that is Dee Gordon. So eager to talk to Dee about what his offseason has looked like, a very different offseason for Dee Gordon as in years past. So all those guys coming up, jam-packed Hot Stove Show. We want to get to our trivia question first and foremost, and this has to do with the boomstick, Nelson Cruz. As you remember, Nelly won his first RBI title last season, and the question is, how many RBIs did he have to go along with those 39 home runs? You can call us, 206-421-3776 is the number. Once again, the question, Nelson Cruz, last year, first career RBI title, how many ribbies did he have to go along with his 39 home runs? The phone number, 206-421-3776. We're eager and excited for this one. Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher, Bill Krueger, And when we come back, a chance to talk things over with one of the newest Mariners. Mariners center fielder Dee Gordon joins us here from Safeco Field after this timeout.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Hot Stove Show rolls along here from Safeco Field. We just mentioned our trivia question. The winner receives a Kyle Seager cream replica jersey you can wear with the players wear, available at all team stores. We'll be announcing that trivia winner coming up a little bit later in the show. Well, this is exciting. Right now, we are eager to welcome one of the newest members of the Mariners, new center fielder, Dee Gordon. Dee, it's good to meet you. It's good to have you. Thanks for joining us. There we go.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, we've all seen the Instagram videos, right? You're flagging them down in center field. How are things going? How's the transition from the infield to the outfield going?
It's going well, going well. Chris Prieto came down a few times. Skip came down, saw me. And it's going well. I worked out with Mr. Griffey a few days. So I'm excited. I'm excited to be a Mariner, excited to be a center fielder.
What's it like working out with Ken? I talked to him right after you came over to the Mariners, and I said, is this going to be like a classroom instruction? He said, nope, I'm going to take him out and hit him balls. What did he do?
That's all he did. That's all he did, man. I was grateful for that opportunity to have a Hall of Famer. You know, I don't care that he lives down the street from me, but to take his time with me, it's pretty amazing, and I definitely tried to soak up all the knowledge he gave me.
Did you have a relationship with Junior before that?
Yeah, real good, real good relationship with him, man. Him playing against my dad for a number of years, taking my dad deep, you know, getting me in trouble because he did it.
So it sounds like you guys have been at it for a while. Tell us about the phone call that you got from Jerry, and not only did you—I mean, I have to think this is not your typical phone call, right? Not only do you find out you're being traded, but you find out that you will be making a fairly drastic position change.
Jerry called me. He was so excited. Like, he didn't give me a chance to, like, even get mad about it or anything. He was so excited to have me. I was just like, all right, man, I got to run through the wall for this guy.
So center field is completely brand new to you?
Somewhat, yeah. I played a total of, like, 8 games in the Dominican. 1 year I got sick and I couldn't finish. And honestly, they didn't even hit me that many balls. So it's pretty new to me.
Well, you can be the thoroughbred that you are now. It's hard to be that thoroughbred at second base, right?
I mean, yeah, it is hard, but you know, I love second base. But,
sure.
You know, it's all good, man. I'm here to help this team win ball games, and whatever I have to do is what I have to do.
What do you see when you look at this lineup right now with you in it?
So what's crazy is I came from a lineup with me, Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich, Marcelo Zuna, Justin Bour, JT Realmuto, which is good in his own right. You know, at a bunch of young guys, and you know, I learned how to become a big leaguer with these young guys, and we played pretty well together, you know. But now it was like, oh snap, you play with Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, you know, like this ain't just your average group of ball players. These are some of the best in the game.
Do you know some of the guys that are already in this clubhouse?
Yeah, I know Robbie pretty well, know Nelly pretty well, know Segura. The younger guys, not so much, but I know the older guys.
Now, Robbie, the connection is from the club when you were a kid. Tell
yes.
That story. I couldn't believe that.
So everybody was like made a big deal about me saying, you know, if I switch for anybody, it would be for Robbie. And that statement was true because I met Robbie when he was 22 years old, a rookie. You know, with the New York Yankees, he lived in Edgewater, New Jersey, like my dad did. And I was small and skinny like I am now. My dad, after the game, like, go walk the subway and get you a sandwich so you can put some weight on, you know. So, middle of the night after a game, you know, 11, 12 o'clock at night, little kid just walking, like, 13, 14 years old. And every night I went in there, the same guy being there every night, Robinson Cano. He couldn't afford the lavish. He's not the $240 million Robinson Cano he is now. He was the rookie, so he was buying Subway every night like me.
That's a great story. Hey, Dee Gordon is our guest here on the Hot Stove Show. And, you know, Dee, I was talking with Jerry DePoto the other day, and no joke, he made it sound like every time he calls you on the phone, you're working out with some Hall of Famer. Now, we already talked about Junior. One of the times that he spoke with you was Barry Larkin.
Yeah.
Flipping to you or something?
Yeah, Barry Larkin has been my mentor since my first year in the big league, so this is going on my 8th year working with him. And we got a nice little group down there. You know, we work down in Orlando, have guys come in, you know, some bigger name guys. And, you know, we get it in. And, you know, he teaches me how to become a big leaguer, how, you know, to respect the game, respect my peers and things like that. And, you know, like I said, he's my mentor. So he's not just a Hall of Famer to me. He's my Hall of Fame mentor.
Wow. You mentioned the Dominican Republic and playing there for a short while,
yes,
a couple
ma'am.
Of minutes ago. Tell us a little bit about strikeout poverty.
Striking out poverty is a thing I got with last year. The PR lady for my agency, I told her, you know, I had just received my contract. And I told her, I was like, before I buy a house for myself or a nice car or something, I want to do something for somebody who needs it. Not just in my community. I do a lot for my community. But someone who doesn't know where their next meal is going to come from, don't have clean water. And the Dominican just kind of came up, and I had been there before. You know, they embraced me there before. I played there 2 years, and they were always great to me. So, honestly, I didn't know what to do or what to expect was going to happen. And when we went, I just fell in love with this community called Cameroon. And we're sitting under this tree, and I told the guys, like, this is the community I want to help. How can I help them? And he told me how, and that's what we did.
And you were down there recently, it looked like, on your
Yeah, I went down there
Twitter?
Recently. Yeah, and what's crazy is I got to see what my money paid for. And, you know, nowadays you write a check and you don't know what you paid for.
Mm.
And not only did my money pay for one treatment facility, it paid for a well that holds 12 gallons of rainwater that they transition over to clean water and three purification tanks that they built. I paid for one. They stretched the money into a well and three tanks.
Wow.
Tell us about that's phenomenal work, by the way. I can't imagine how powerful that is when you see that with your own eyes. Good for you. Tell us about sharing a clubhouse, playing alongside, and I would think in some forms working out with Ichiro.
Ichi. That's my boy, man. I love Ichi, man. Like, y'all don't understand, like, my first year in 15 with the Marlins, Ichi made a comment to me. I was like, Ichi, how long are you going to play for us? And he was like, as long as you're here. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, so we friends like that? Like, you know, and, you know, Ichi's, oh, man, I can't explain to y'all how much I admire that guy since the first day I've ever seen him.
Besides the obvious, right? I mean, his ability to put the bat to the ball. What else is there that you like so much?
The person. Ichi's like the nicest person you'll ever meet in your life. But you can't touch his stuff. Don't touch Ichi's stuff. But
Did you learn that the hard way?
No, not me. I watched somebody else mess up. And it's crazy the type of relationship me and Ichi had. Like, I sat right here. My stuff sat here. And he sat right next to me every game, every day, no matter where we were, wherever I sat my stuff, because I let off, you know. So I'd come out early, sit my stuff down, and he sat his stuff directly next to me. He'll ask me about pitchers. It was like, this is crazy, like Ichiro asking me stuff, like, and it's just awesome. And the big thing with me coming from L.A., they tried to get me to walk more. And I asked him, first day I met him, I was like, Ichi, how do you walk more? And he told me the best thing anybody's ever told me, rake first. So walking's out the door.
Well, you've done plenty of that. I mean, you're a 300 hitter, and that's going to be exciting for this team.
Thank you, sir.
I see the 60 stolen bases, and my feeling is there's more to come as you get to know the league a little bit. But, you know, interesting in baseball today, we've kind of become this all-or-nothing game. And it would seem that with Jerry DePoto and the way he's thinking and this team, you see they've got some guys that can run, that that can be a powerful tool,
right,
that you could bring to the table. Can be an intimidating tool. I played back in the day when the stolen base was bigger.
Right.
How do you feel about the stolen base? What do you think? I mean, how many can you steal?
I mean, honestly, I had 60, and, you know, that was a blessing to get 60 again. But the first month, going into May, I had 4.
Oh.
And then in July, like halfway through July and August, I didn't steal any bases because Giancarlo hit a homer every time. So I had to make mine up in spurts.
Right.
But it's weird to me because, you know, we all watch the playoffs. And as soon as they get to the World Series in the playoffs, they ask guys to bunt, they ask guys to steal bases and do all of that. But nobody does it during the regular season. It's the craziest thing. Like, no one uses these weapons that they have until the last second, until it's do or die, which is crazy.
Mm. Gonna change that.
I'm going to try.
Going to change it. You bet.
We have very limited time left with D. Gordon, but since you brought up Stanton, and now you'll be playing with Nelson Cruz, I'm trying to envision or think of someone who's had the chance to play alongside both of those guys. I think you might be the only one, or on a very short list at least. I'm trying to look through the baseball reference Rolodex. But, I mean, those are two of the greatest sluggers of their era.
Right.
What was it like when Stanton went on that absolute binge that made him the National League MVP?
That was impressive. It was impressive. And I was on first base a lot.
He wasn't letting you use your speed. Is that what you're saying?
It didn't matter. As long as I crossed that little home plate, I was good.
By the way, I think that you're very well worth a follow on Instagram, and you had one of the great Instagrams I've seen in recent years. I want to say it was inside of your Lamborghini with a McDonald's cup.
See, what happened was I was drinking. I don't let anything in my Lamborghini, and I have to.
I'm the same way, dude.
Yeah. Because, like, I've worked really hard for that car. So I took a picture of the cup, and I was like, it was a joke. Like, I can't believe I have something in my – I'm letting this be in here. And then it was like, well, it's actually good because you didn't forget that you ate McDonald's before you were a big leaguer, and since you're a big leaguer now, you're not going to stay away from it. So it was more like motivational, and I think people took it.
Please tell me you went through the drive-thru.
Yes.
Yes!
Sure.
What color is the Lamborghini?
It's black.
All right. I'm sure that the young man or woman in the McDonald's drive-thru window have scoped out your car. Probably they haven't seen many of those coming through their window. Hey, D, this has been a lot of fun to get to know you. We are excited to get to know you even more in Peoria and spring training, but thanks for spending some time with us here on the Hot Stove. And, man, we are really excited to watch you play in a Mariners uniform.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys.
Have a great spring.
All right, thank you.
That is D. Gordon, Mariners' new center fielder, kind enough to give us some time here on the Hot Stove. When we come back, Mariners' new first baseman Ryan Healy joins us after this timeout.
All things Mariners, all off-season. The Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, hey, the time is now to join the club as a Mariners season ticket holder. You can lock in the best seats at the best prices to catch all the action at Safeco Field for 2018. You can pick up more information on the many benefits you'll enjoy as a season ticket holder by simply going to mariners.com/18. Welcome back. A little bit of a special edition Hot Stove Show live here from Safeco Field outside the KeyBank Diamond Club. Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher, Bill Krueger, and Ryan Healy, Mariners' new first baseman, is kind enough to join us. Ryan, it's our first time meeting you, and this is a pretty exciting time for you, I'm sure, to be putting on a new uniform, a little bit of the unknown. What have been your early days as a Mariner like for you so far?
It's been exciting. You know, I had the opportunity to run into a couple guys in Miami with the Nelson Cruz workouts that he put together. With how quickly he reached out to me, it was special just playing against him as it was, but being able to be his teammate and everyone else that comes along with it, how personable he's been and everyone else that's reached out, it's made the transition that much smoother for me. And, you know, coming up this week for this event and also to walk around the city a little bit, it's just been really exciting for me.
You like the rain?
Love the rain. I promise you that I'm not even lying.
Really?
No, I'm lying.
You got used to it in Eugene, probably.
Exactly. There's plenty of this there. So, honestly, every time I get off the plane in the Pacific Northwest, I take a big, deep breath, and it just feels like home.
All right. They got the right guy.
That's right.
Today you must really love.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Camp Cruz. We saw some of the videos on Instagram, heard a little bit about it from a couple of people who were there. But what was that like to spend a couple of days with those guys, start to finish?
I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But when Nelson Cruz invites you somewhere, you buy a plane ticket the next day. So that's exactly what I did. And going there, I reached out to a couple of guys, Mitch Haniger being one, and then Ben Gamble too. Ben being there, just not knowing what to expect. All I know is I expected to sweat a lot and work out, so I was looking forward to that. Also getting to socialize with the guys in a workout environment, a competitive environment, and also just watch how Nelson works was one of the biggest perks for me. Someone who's probably one of the top 2-3 professionals in the game that you just look at and you're like, that's a big leaguer. For me, watching him work out and listening to him talk and how he just carries himself as a human being, not just a ball player, but as a human being, it's special.
He said he kind of wanted to kind of embrace the new people a little bit early, give them a little taste of Mariners culture. What came across?
And then that's exactly what he did. So everything he was aiming for, he definitely nailed. It's got to be a tough transition. Obviously, my first time being traded, but walking into a new clubhouse, shaking a lot of new hands, meeting a lot of new faces, and it's tough to form relationships right off the bat. But you do it in more of a controlled environment, where they're from the weight room, or you go out to dinner and have some drinks, whatever it may be. It's easier to let your guard down and really converse more, and it's less of a veteran rookie or whatever conversation that it is. It's more of a person-to-person type atmosphere. So it was nice to have that kind of relationship even before going to spring training.
Well, I would think fans, you know, we play in this AL West and interdivision play. It's such a big deal. So we've seen a lot of Ryan Healy, but you played third, you played first. Now it looks like it's going to be first exclusively. How do you feel about first base? And I guess that's the impression that we're most interested in hearing about is your ideas about first base and how you fit into the lineup.
You know, I've played first base my entire life. I can't even tell you how many innings I've spent over there, all the way through my childhood to pony baseball, high school, college. That's been my home. Third base was more of a professional transition to me. That's where I broke into the major leagues. But I think first base was somewhere I always thought that I would end up, just because it's a comfort position for me. Being in Seattle to hopefully fill that void is something that I was really looking forward to, that challenge and opportunity.
Well, I can tell you something that I remember when Mark McGwire was joining the A's. Okay, this is going back a ways when I was on the team. And they had him at third. And he was looking over at first base. He made a big left-handed first baseman that they liked a lot. Eventually, he got over to first base, and he did pretty well. So hopefully that'll be your same path.
Exactly. That's the hope.
Ryan Healy is our guest here on the Hot Stove Show, Mariners' new first baseman. All right, Ryan, let's go back to the college roots a little bit. You know, for a long time, you know this better than anybody, the baseball program for the Ducks was dormant, right? It went away. It wasn't such a thing. And then, wouldn't you know it, all of a sudden the Beavs start being kind of the program, certainly on the coast, one of the premier programs in the country. And then all of a sudden, the Ducks think that they might want to start up a baseball program of their own. You were obviously a big part of kind of bringing that back to life, a first-round draft pick out of Eugene. What are your memories like in college being in this region, a California guy? And it's, any memories you might have coming to Seattle to play the Huskies?
Well, I think I know who your favorite Mariner is now, being an Andrew Moore with the Oregon State Beaver alum. I'll remember that moving forward.
I was trying to think, is there another clubhouse that has a Beav and a Duck in it? I mean, is this probably not right now, but if there's been one, I mean.
Not that I had it. Actually, my roommate in High A, Ryan Gordon, was a Beaver alum. So we were able to, you know, to push the things aside and be not only teammates but roommates.
Okay, so we hope for the same type of arrangement with Andrew. We hope you guys get along.
Exactly. Moving forward, the question was, Oregon was just kind of a dream for me. Being a California kid, I had the opportunity to go to a lot of the Pac-12 schools in California as it was. And visiting there, it didn't feel like home. The minute I stepped foot in Eugene, it was just comfort. It was comfort. It was a college atmosphere. It was, you know, people that were willing to do whatever it took to help maximize your on-field and off-field production. You know, the terminology student-athlete, a lot of places it's skewed in the sense that you're always an athlete, but they really cared about your academics, and that's why I have my degree. I went back and finished my first two off seasons just because of their commitment and my own commitment to my academics. So,
what's your degree in?
Applied Business and Economics.
Does Jerry know about this?
Yeah, he does. Probably not, but he'll hear about it now. It was comfort, and the coaching staff was all from Southern California, being George Horton. Andrew Checkitz was actually a local Oregon boy, but there was Jay Allman and other folk that were all Southern California guys that proved that the transition wasn't hard, and I think we all found that out very quickly when we all joined the reigning forces up there with the turf facilities, and we learned how to play in the rain, so I'm excited to be able to do it again here.
There's a roof.
There's a
You're
roof.
Out
There's
of luck.
Roof.
It'll be cold.
Not
it won't be wet, right now, I guess. I was telling someone earlier, I had to have four pairs of batting gloves, one for each at bat in the dugout ready, just in case I'm pouring rain, at least in college. It was tough to come by batting gloves nowadays. It's easier, but
when you're an amateur, not
exactly,
quite so much.
Exactly.
I can imagine.
Playing in Oakland, what are you going to miss about that building?
The people that are in it.
Yeah. They're small but mighty.
They are mighty.
It was a great group of people. Everyone that worked there, to the teammates, to the coaching staff. Great experiences there. It was somewhere that, you know, it was home for a while. I mean, I got drafted by them, came up to the minor leagues, familiar faces all the time. But you know, all good things come to an end, and they make ways for better things, which is why I'm now here in Seattle and ready to make some new memories and have some new successes up here.
So as you look at you've had 2 full years in the big leagues. I don't know, full, that may not be quite accurate, but pretty close. And last year, 25 homers. But as watching you as a hitter, you seem pretty focused on the middle of the field and inside the ball and not really looking to pull the ball and trying to hit for a higher average. Am I sort of ringing the right tune here with you? Or
100%.
Do you see yourself as someone that's going to be more focused on power?
No, I think I want to be a complete hitter, and that kind of falls more in the category of, you know, watch Robinson Cano, not to compare myself to him by any stretch, but, you know, he's a guy that hits 3-plus every year with 20 to 30 homers all the time, and, you know, it's just consistency. I want to be the guy that's, you know, not only driving in runs and hitting home runs and hitting doubles, but I want to be a guy that's hitting for high average and getting on base a lot and, you know, doing whatever I can to help the ball club win. I'm not going to, you know, be D. Gordon and steal 30, 40 bags for you guys, but, you know, if I can drive in 80 to 120 runs every year, I think that the win percentage around here will go up and success will continue to flourish.
Are you a see-the-ball, hit-the-ball type of guy? Are you a film guy? What's kind of your makeup between the ears when it comes to that?
Depends how the swing feels. It definitely fluctuates. I think that was the biggest complication for me was first full season learning how to compete on an everyday basis against the highest of level of pitching. I mean, I have 4, 5, 6 sets of eyes on me every single day with the opponents, you know, pitching coach, assistant pitching coach, bullpen coach, catching coach, catchers, pitchers. I have to be just as sharp, if not sharper than them, to make sure that my approach is locked in. So the opportunity to learn from some of the veterans that are on this team who have utilized those tools with the media that you have, the video, I want to learn how to use that to my advantage and find a way to have the most success to give myself the best opportunity for success every day.
So the season ends last year. I'm sure you do some self-evaluation. What did you see and what did you want to kind of work on and bring into spring training, wherever it was?
People brought up, bring up 25 homers and you hit 270, whatever. I didn't leave last year excited about my numbers. I didn't leave last year feeling great about what I did. I felt like I learned a lot. I felt like there's a lot of things to improve on, and that's been my biggest goal this offseason, is improving little things that will make me a better player over the longevity of my career, fine-tuning some approach things, fixing some mechanical things that may have gotten away from me in the second half. First time playing 162 games in a long season, some things get away from you, health, mind, whatever it may be, learning to control those things on every given basis and have the proper routine and preparation that you feel like you're ready to go compete at the big league level and have success.
Our final minute here with first baseman Ryan Healy. You're a big guy, Ryan. Have you had some good meals while you've been in town? I mean, have you been able to scope out the culinary landscape all right?
My girlfriend gave me flack for this earlier. There's a Cafe Yum right underneath the Hyatt, and Cafe Yum is like a college delicacy for me. So not only did I have one meal there today, but I had two. So
okay. That sounds fairly high in carbs. Is that?
It's brown rice. It's healthy carbs.
Okay, yes, very nice.
Double chicken, too, so I got the healthy protein
all right,
in there.
Nicely done. Hey, Ryan, this is our first time meeting you, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. Welcome to Seattle. And we can't wait to talk to you more and watch you more in spring training.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Mariners first baseman Ryan Healy, kind enough to join us here on the Hot Stove. We got plenty more to get to. This has been a fantastic show so far. D. Gordon, Ryan Healy, when we come back, Mariners catcher Mike Zunino. This should be a lot of fun. Mariners catcher Mike Zunino comes up after this quick break.
Back to more of the Hot Stove on 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, buy more and save. Discounted tickets are available for groups of 20 or more. Flexible seating options, private hospitality, and picnic packages are all available to complete your groups at the ballpark. For more information, you can book your 2018 group date by visiting mariners.com/groups. Hot Stove Show here from Safeco Field rolls along outside the KeyBank Diamond Club. This has been a off-the-charts good show, and we have high expectations for our next guest. We've heard from D. Gordon. We've heard from Ryan Healy, a couple of newcomers. It's nice to see a familiar face, one of our favorites, Mike Zunino. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. What's it like? You know, you were just in Florida the other day, I'm sure, warm and sunny, and now you're back home, right?
Yeah. I mean, I spend more time here. It's actually been cooler in Florida than it has been here, so I've been waiting to come here and just sort of enjoy the weather.
How's the offseason going?
It's going well. I mean, it's obviously one of those things where nice to take a month to reboot and relax, but it's been nice kicking it back into gear, and after the holidays, you can really get it going, and looking forward to getting back on the field.
you look at the team right now that's been coming together in the offseason, and one of the neat things, and some people, more moves, but a lot more set this year. You guys, you know, had so many new faces last year, and you're going to go into camp recognizing a lot more.
Yeah, I think when you can go into camp and not have some question marks everywhere, it's really nice. I mean, obviously, we have some great pieces. I mean, Jerry's done a great job of filling those needs, and it's going to be fun to go in there and have, the lineup pretty much set. And I mean, we have some great arms in camp, so it's going to be really nice to see those guys come out and get things going. And health is the big thing, but I think we'll be good this year.
I would think after this past season, you obviously have had some great stretches in the big leagues, but you were able to really make it last the whole season. We really started to see those glimpses become much, much more consistently seen beyond the stuff you do behind the plate. That must have been very gratifying for you. I know you're not resting on your laurels, but you must feel differently coming into this year.
100%. It's one of those things where it took some major changes and to overhaul some stuff, but it happened at the right time. Some stuff was done to fix my swing, and it made sense, and I think that was the biggest thing. It finally felt right. It felt natural, and to be able to have some results to back that up is really going to be good to go into that, and I have, quite the foundation now to lean on. When stuff does go bad, I can really fix it quick.
Mike, can you tell us about June? What was that like? Now that you've had a chance to step back from it and reflect on it, what was that month like for you?
Completely blacked out. I have no idea.
In a very good way.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great. I mean, it was one of those things where I had one I want to say phase of swing adjustments that I did, and June was really when it hit the ground running. But I really give a lot of credit. You mean when I first got called back up from that, I went 1-for-17, and Skip called me in his office and said, "Hey, look," he's like, "trust it." And that was at the end of May, and June sort of was me trusting that. And then I made a couple more tweaks as the season went on to sort of combat what guys were doing. And that was the biggest thing. But I think June really was the confidence boost that I needed.
There are always ups and downs. And July was a little bit rougher. Mm-hmm. What was different about July, though, for you? Because August and September were very good.
Yes. I mean, obviously, I incorporated a much larger leg kick. I narrowed up. So I needed to realize how can I shut that leg kick down if guys slide step. I put a little bit more movement in my hands to match my leg kick, so it gave me some rhythm. There was other things that I was still working on. It was really getting the foundation down and then making the small adjustments to iron everything out. And, August and September were really, me finding out who I was and how I was going to use that swing versus certain guys.
As a pitcher, and I watched, you've seen a lot of your at-bats, probably most all of your at-bats from the broadcast booth, but the thing that's so noticeable, above and beyond the things you're talking about, is your ability to hit the ball to the right side of the field and not just hit it there where you're just trying to make some kind of soft serve to survive, but actually really doing it with some authority. Mm-hmm. Is that something that I think you just discovered, that you could actually do it? And now that you're doing it, do you feel like it's just there for you, that you could just think that way?
Yeah, that was the biggest adjustment. If somebody asked me who I was as a hitter, what my strengths were, I'd always say, right center, but it was more of a mentality. And now it's one of those things where my swing allows me to do that. And, I want to drive balls, out to right center. And, if I'm a little bit in front, that's when I can do that to a breaking ball and pull it. But that was the biggest thing, was being able to really focus on right center, try to drive balls in that gap. And it actually helped me pull the ball, because I was staying on everything and hit a lot of balls truer to the left side.
Well, I'm telling you as a pitcher that you continue to do that, it becomes a major problem. A major problem. I'm just giving you a little bit of, the mental side of what the pitcher's looking at. When guys stay on balls and smear them to right field, and then they know that it's a major problem to come inside, you really start holding all the cards in your hand.
Yeah, so. And that was the goal doing that.
All right, Mike, let's go defensive side of things here for you. I'm pulling up the full list of names of pitchers that the Mariners used last year. Now, there were 40 in total, right?
We're not going to make him name them all?
Which tied a major league record, but I'm just going to – let's just go through some of these, okay? I think this will be fun for the fans. This is a good trivia game. Did this person pitch for the Mariners last year?
So it would be a new game show. Yeah. We could definitely have a full season
of
it.
Now, there obviously a lot of these are very familiar names, but let's – all right, Zach Curtis, Casey Feen, Ryan Garten. All right, let's keep going down the list. Chris Heston. Let's see – Gene Machi, Evan Marshall, Cody Martin, we saw him, Dylan Overton, right? I think you get what we're Max Posey.
Carlos Ruiz.
Oh.
He was next on the list. I see Thiago Vieira's name, and now I have to put the brakes on my question and say, what in the world did you say to the umpire after Thiago's warm-up pitch at like 100 went?
So that's one of my better stories because Gary's great behind the plate.
And Cedarstrom, right?
Yes, okay. And he's great to talk to. You can hold conversation with him. I've had him a lot, so far in my career behind the plate. So we have a good lines of communication.
First of all, tell for those who don't remember what we're talking about, set it up and tell the full story.
So Vieira comes in. He's making his major league debut. I've caught him one time in spring training. Knows he throws 100 miles an hour plus. And he comes in and he starts letting some pitchers rip. And Gary usually stands on the outside of the circle and we talk. And I told him, I said, hey, this guy's making his major league debut. Throws 104. I've caught him one time. So I said, so if I have to get out of the way, I'm going right. You can go behind me. And he starts laughing. He goes, Z, if you have to do that, he said, I'm never talking to you again. And as he says that, it's the last warm-up pitch. And Vieira pulls it so far to the left. It may have missed him by, it seemed like a foot, but it may have been like three or four. And it goes all the way to the backstop, almost in the air. And Gary looks at me and goes, what was that? Because his back was there. I said, I told you, I've only caught him once. I didn't know where it was going. But it was just one of those things where I felt bad for Vieira because I didn't know how he was. I didn't have the time to, he landed that day. I didn't know how much confidence he had going into it, but he came in and threw a great, actually the first pitch was the line drive right back to him.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
Thank God he caught it because it would hit him square in between the eyes. But
I forgot about that.
But between those two pitches back to back, it was a pretty scary,
pretty eventful,
pretty scary two pitches.
Well, it made the warm up pitch, the last one, made for like the gif of the year. I mean, it really did. Cedarstrom's face was just sensational.
And when it happened, I just said, "Hey, Gary, can we get a new ball?" And it was a good time. And obviously, when you can laugh that stuff off with them, it makes it even better.
Also on that list, Erasmo Ramirez and Mike Leake. They're going to be a big part of the rotation this year. What have you learned about them?
I'll go back. I'll start with Erasmo. I mean, obviously, I caught him a lot when I first got called up. And, when he went over to Tampa, he made some big changes. He developed a cutter. I mean, obviously, the changeup's still a very good pitch. The sinker's great. But it's just one of those things where that cutter really helped him stay on the ball. He can drive that ball into left-handed hitters. He has enough of a slider to show it. And that cutter, to me, just really solidified what he is as a pitcher. And he can get a lot of weak contact. He can fill the strike zone up. And I think he really grew as a pitcher over there. And, Mike Leake, there's not enough good stuff to say from what I saw from him. He just came over. He's just so professional in what he does. Commands both sides of the plate with all of his pitches. I think he's got like five or six, but it's a ton. He's got curveball, slider, cutter, changeup, sinker, four-seam, and he could just do it all. But he's a guy that, sort of had that ability. I don't think he has any minor league time. So to see how he developed and to be that type of guy, he can really hit his spots, and I think he can teach a lot to those guys that aren't going to out-stuff guys really how to pitch.
One of the few guys who's less minor league time than Mike Zunino. Hey, we have 2 minutes, literally 2 minutes left with you. But to get back to my original question before I went off the wheels with the Thiago Vieira gift, to think about the career year that you had offensively last season, while also maintaining this buffet of pitchers, 40 and all that you had to learn, what was that like? How much did that challenge you for what is your great skill set of being behind the plate?
Yeah, I think having a little bit of that offensive success helped. Because obviously if it was struggling there, that could lead there into struggles on the defensive side. But to me, it taught me a lot as a catcher. How am I going to interact with guys? A lot of the times I met a guy that flew in that day, and you're trying to run, and we were so thin that those guys were pitching that day.
Right.
So it just really taught you how to read swings, how to use this guy's strengths, and it sort of taught me how to call games and not overthink the game plan, but stick to our guy's strengths and try to exploit the hitter's weaknesses and just keep it as simple as that.
Mike, we love talking to you, man. It's so good to see you, especially this time of year. We know that you're busy during the offseason getting ready, but hopefully the knees are feeling a little rested, right?
They're good to go. Okay. However many Skip needs me in there for, I should be good.
And pitchers and catchers are coming up, right around Valentine's Day, right?
Yep. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's always nice. That's always 2 years in a row on Valentine's Day. So I owe my wife a good dinner after we report.
Mike, it's always a treat, man. Thank you for stopping by. It's great to have you in town. We can't wait to see you and catch up more down in Peoria.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. One of our favorites, Mike Zunino, stopping by. As that'll do it for the first hour here on the Hot Stove Show, and this is a very special edition here from Safeco Field, live outside the Diamond Club. And, boy, second hour is going to be just as packed as the first. We will be hearing from Mitch Haniger, Scott Service as well. James Pazos will be joining us from the Caravan alongside Rick Riz, and also Kyle Lewis as well, Mariners top prospect. So a lot to get to. We got more coming up. Second hour of the Hot Stove Show is coming up with Mitch Haniger right after this timeout.